So we're building new economies. We're building, you know, technology that allows anybody to own digital assets, share them freely. And, you know, we're seeing kind of, you know, the world react to bad actors in the world by shutting down bank accounts and these sorts of things, where cryptocurrencies decentralize that.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Campfire. I am your host, Desmond Dixon, and I'm here with my two co-hosts, Heather Stafford and Mr. Josh Jacko. And today we have a special guest. We have the man, the myth, the legend, the guy who's going to change the world and connect two worlds together. We have Mr. Alan Smithson. What's up, Alan?
Wow, thank you so much. That's quite the introduction. Holy moly. Thank you. Thanks for having me, guys.
So before we jump in, let's kind of give an idea with who Alan Smithson is. So I'm going to give you a quick bio. So Alan Smithson, purpose in life is to inspire, educate people to think and act in a socially, economically, and environmentally responsible way. Mr. Smithson is a co-founder of Metaverse, a low-code platform that makes it easy to share and create and share interactive 3D experiences instantly on the web. He's a proud father, business leader, TEDx speaker, and podcast host. Mr. Smithson co-invented the world's first touchscreen DJ system, emulator, featured on Dragon's Den and winning DJ Mag's Innovative Product of the Year 2011. His 10-year-old daughter invented sandals that leave a heart-shaped tan line on your feet, called Love Sandal, winning top 20 under 20 at only 10 years old. Dad of the year, guys. Dad of the year. He is an independent global advisor on the business of XR for Fortune 500 companies and UHNW family offices. Man, like, what is it that you do everything, man?
Well, I'm actually going to Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, in 2 weeks to speak at the Ritosa Summit, which is a family office summit for high net worth individuals and family offices. And collectively, the group under the Ritosa Summit, they control $4.5 trillion, with a T, $1 trillion in investable wealth. So I'm an advisor to their firm and some other sovereign wealth funds and things like this. So the idea is that we really want to give people a good understanding of where to invest their money responsibly with, you know, that will create the most value and impact. So. Yeah.
Man. All right. I guess we got to just dive in and like, you got to give us the goods, Alan.
Sure.
How did Alan become Alan? Like, what did this, like, give us kind of a quick synopsis of your journey and sure. You know, we'll kind of unpack it from there.
Well, I guess I have to go back to, day one where I was born. Luckily, I won the geographic lottery and I was born in Canada, in Toronto. And, you know, I can't stress that enough, that just the sheer luck of being born in Canada. Or if you're born in the US or wherever you're born, I mean, you don't choose that. And, you know, just by having that massive advantage of being born here, really did, you know, help, because, you know, the opportunities that I've been afforded in my life is all because of that. So I was born in Canada, third generation, actually, in Toronto. And, from there, I ended up going to university for molecular biology, and I have a degree in molecular biology. From the University of Guelph. And then I got accepted to med school, which was my mom's dream for me, go to med school. And I was like, I don't want to do this. So I was like, okay, this isn't for me. But in the course of going through university, I ended up learning how to DJ. I lived with a group of DJs and I ended up DJing, you know, parties and events. And I DJed like Thursday nights in the bar and Friday nights in, you know, in the karaoke bar, and then Saturday nights in the club. And, you know, it was through kind of DJing on the weekends. And then I got a degree in, you know, molecular biology. And then I graduated and I was like, well, what am I going to do? I don't want to be a doctor. I have this science degree. I like to talk to people. So I became a pharmaceutical rep. And I started, you know, selling pharmaceuticals. And that was super, super fun job as a young person. Oh my goodness. They give you a car keys, a computer, and a credit card. And they're like, go. Yay. So it was fun. I was really, really good at that job and had a great time. And then I was lucky to also DJ on the weekends. And, you know, it was really awesome that I continued to do that. And eventually we tried a bunch of different businesses because I didn't want to, I read a book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and it kind of fundamentally changed my mindset of being an employee versus an entrepreneur. And the fundamental difference between them is as an employee, you get paid, the government takes their tax, and then you are left with whatever's left out over for your expenses. As a business, you pay your expenses, and then whatever's left over, the government can tax. And so that's the fundamental difference. You pay your tax before or after expenses. And that to me made a lot of sense, not to mention there's different rates. So I was like, okay, well, I'm going to be an entrepreneur. Didn't know anything about it. Didn't know what I was doing. And I made DJ business on the weekends. I was the closest to being an entrepreneur I knew. And then I started a medical billing company that failed. I started a real estate holding company. We had a bunch of real estate that we rented out to students, and that was very successful. Made a lot of money there. I started a nutraceutical company after reading the 4-Hour Work Week by, what's the guy's name? 4-Hour Work Week. Tim Ferriss. Ended up having dinner with Tim a while back as well. But anyway, started a nutraceutical company that failed. Did a bunch of other things. We actually bought a chalet and created a hostel at the foot of a mountain called Blue Mountain Hostel. Did that. Then they shut us down for zoning. So that failed. I had to sell the real estate holding company and all the real estate to pay for the losses on the other one. So it's been a bumpy road of entrepreneurship. And then my DJ business started to take off. And so we just focused on that. So we were like, okay, well, this is fun. And, you know, I kind of had a purpose in life. Was my purpose then was to make as many people as happy as possible with the skill sets that I had. And that time was DJing. So I've DJed for over 2 million people in my life. I retired 5 years ago. I was like, okay, I'm done. But that led me to do some other things. And in 2010, we invented the emulator, which was the world's first multi-touch application for Windows, Windows 7 at the time, I guess it was. And, you know, that I'll actually share my screen because I think that was something that was super, super cool because we, you know, can you see my screen? Okay. So I'll just turn it down. So this is the emulator. And what it was is a giant see-through touchscreen that you could see from the audience and you could program to be whatever you wanted. So it could be a DJ controller. It could be a lighting controller. It could be a MIDI controller for music, audio, video. And so we ended up working with all sorts of amazing bands and brands. And it was super cool. Like, you know, for example, there's Mark Rumboy, Cedric Gervais in this video, Flow Riders in this video, the Emmys. It was just an incredible, that's, you know, Infected Mushroom at Coachella. There's Cedric Gervais there, Flow Riders that, you know, right here, there's Flow Rider, there's the Emmys, there's me, that's me in Amsterdam. So anyway, going around the world, promoting this thing. And we, you know, we ended up selling a ton of these things and we got invited to DJ at, you know, huge events like Microsoft's Build Conference. And, you know, there's the World Euro competition and stuff like this. So, in 2014, I got invited to Curiosity Camp by Eric Schmidt. And it was this camp put on by Eric Schmidt for tech investors, entrepreneurs, researchers, and, you know, just a bunch of really smart people. And it was kind of this wild kind of aha moment because the people weren't there to do business with each other. They were there to talk about the future of the world and in terms of technology and what they were building. It was not about, you know, how do I sell more things? It was not like that at all. It was really interesting. And it was at that moment I got to try VR for the first time. After I performed, I went into this little tent and this dude was giving demos. And I was like, what's this crazy box that you're sticking on people's head? And I put it on and he put on headphones and I was on stage standing next to Beck and Beck was playing. And I was like, whoa, I had that. And of course I was staring straight and somebody pushed my shoulder and I realized I could look all the way around me. And I had that kind of, you know, like gasp of a moment. And that was when I knew this was going to be the future of human communications. And since then, I've kind of expanded my vision of what, you know, what can be possible with this technology. And really, it's not going to be the human, you know, the future of human communication. It's going to be the human communication, collaboration, commerce, and culture. And we're already seeing the metaverse, you know, is permeating this in every way. And we were kind of very lucky, I guess. And again, luck played a role in it. We were lucky that, you know, I had a partner and he came to me one day. He just finished reading Snow Crash and he said, what do you think of the name Metaverse, but spelled with VR instead of, you know, VER? I was like, well, that's a really good idea. That's a good name. I love the book. Let's do it. And so we called it Metaverse. And that was in 2016. We renamed the company, called it Metaverse. And, you know, now it seems like the entire world is talking about our brand, which is nice. And, you know, our brand as the future of the internet, which is super cool. It's kind of like calling your company the internet back in the day of the internet. So we're very blessed there. And then, you know, for the last several years since 2014, we've been building virtual augmented mixed reality solutions for businesses. We've built 360 videos. We did events. We did AR applications. We did the launch for HBO's Westworld in AR. We did a VR photo booth for Samsung. We just built all sorts of projects. And in the last kind of 6 years, we've done over 125 projects. And so what I didn't want to have, and I didn't want to become this agency forever, because you're always on the treadmill. What I wanted to do was build a product company. So in 2018, we started, my wife and I, we work together. She does operations, I do sales and marketing. And we came up with our idea of building our own accelerator. And so we called it XR Ignite. We assembled 65 of the world's mentors, top mentors in XR. And we pulled everybody together and we built an accelerator, and we had a bunch of companies apply, and we ended up finding one company through that process and through some mutual friends, this company called Cherry 3D. They were in stealth, very young company. Technology was super cool, but it was very early days. But they had built a web-based creation platform where you could take 3D, drop it in a browser, hit publish, and see it on your phone in AR instantly. And I mean, this was, you know, 2018 that we saw that. So you can imagine this was before anybody had figured this out. And the one thing that I kept thinking in my head is, why is it so hard to make XR? Why is it so difficult to make these experiences and games? It's very hard. You need to know what to code. You need to understand 3D. It was really difficult. And so two questions came up. Can we make it easier? And then the second question came because of customers. They didn't want the first question is like, can we do this without an app? Every single time they're like, can we do it without an app? And so the only way to do it without an app is through the browser. And so it had to be, I had two criteria. It had to be, you know, easy to use and web-based. And so Cherry 3D, we acquired them. We merged the two companies together, and actually their CEO became our CEO, which is great. And so we put the two companies together, and it was Cherry 3D's platform, their technology, Metaverse's brand and customer list. And we put those two together, and it was like 1 + 1 = 100. So we've been working together nonstop since 2019. We merged the two companies, and then we launched the product as the Metaverse Engine in June 2020. We secured contracts with large companies, really big companies, doing both marketing. We had a theory that the technology could be really used for marketing, but also for training and education. And so we realized that if you, let's say, for example, smartphone. If I took a smartphone and I, you know, animated it to open up and maybe spin or whatever the animation would be in 3D. If I did that, I could actually use it for training people on how the phone worked and maybe the features. But I could also, with very easy changes, make it work for marketing as well. And so with very little marginal cost, you could add this incredible functionality. So that was our thing. It was like marketing and training. We're going to go after two verticals in any industry. So we did automotive, we did retail, we did all these things. And so we really, we again, became very lucky. Somebody referred us a piece of business, and we ended up landing one of the largest medical device companies in the world right at the time of COVID. And, you know, COVID had just hit. We just launched our product June 2020, right in the thick of COVID. And this company needed a way to train people on this blood machine used for testing for COVID. And they couldn't fly anybody in or fly anybody out. So we ended up taking their entire training manuals and converting it to 3D. And so the case studies will be out this summer, but we've been working with them for 2 years. We've expanded to, 20 different products with them. And now we're going to be doing all of their products over the next 5 years. And so the value is really, really being created in the training side. And now they're also using it for marketing as well. We've also worked with Samsung, which was really cool over the years. We built virtual showrooms and virtual stores for MasterCard. And through all of these things, what really struck us was that people were ready for something new, but not that new. So we built like really far out things. You know, it's the metaverse. It could be anything. You don't need gravity. Who needs these things, right? So we built crazy things. And what we realized is that we had to take it back a bit. So we ended up working on a thing called The Mall, which is going to be The Mall. That's the name of it. And we built this mall that you can walk around with your friends. You could send people a web link, meet them in front of the store, and you can walk around together. There's little avatars, and you can go buy things for yourself or for your avatar or both. So that's the full circle of where we've come. in a very small amount of time.
Oh man, Heather, you're going to love this conversation. Heather has a background in AI, and this is her wheelhouse.
You hear what we're working on in AI.
Oh man, like you're literally like innovating in multiple fronts, right? You innovated with this DJ platform, it blew up. You're aligning your purpose with providing value to the marketplace, and now you're going into this innovative space. You got it way earlier, so you have first mover advantage, and you already have case studies like the business model. You understand some things that obviously people who are just starting out now need to learn, right? So you have that competitive
advantage. We never hid it, and that's the other thing, Desmond. You know, we never hid the knowledge. So if somebody would call me and say, because you know, I always wanted to just give as much as possible to the industry, and so I wrote articles. I wrote, you know, we did a podcast. My wife and I both did two podcasts, not because we wanted to do a podcast, but because we wanted to learn. And then if we wanted to know this information, potentially the world wants to know it. So we just recorded it, like you guys are doing now. But we did the XR for Learning podcast. My wife did, you know, episodes interviewing everybody about how virtual augmented mixed reality or XR is being used for education and learning and training. And then I did the XR for Business podcast, where we interviewed people on where's the value being created in retail and automotive and, you know, manufacturing, all of these different things. So the idea was where's the value being created at scale? And, you know, if there is any scale, and where's the opportunities in the future? And so one of the big ones that kept coming up is retail, you know, using 3D and AR for retail. And now, of course, you know, with Decentraland Sandbox and Roblox, bringing people into these virtual worlds, it just all culminated into what we are, you know, what we're building now. So very exciting.
Okay. So like based upon what you're seeing in the market right now, like with all these different fronts, right? You have the metaverse, you have, you know, XR, right? Like, which out of all these technologies, which one of them you see is gaining the most traction in the marketplace right now? Like, what's getting the most like adaptability in terms of scale?
The largest scale right now is Snapchat or Snap. If you scroll to the bottom of Snap's website, it says Snap is a camera company. They are a camera first company, and they do more augmented reality than every company combined times 10. They have done over a trillion snaps that have AR in them. They just don't call it AR. They just call it face filters, right? World filters. They didn't call it AR. They didn't get into that. They just like, look, it works. Try it. Here's a studio. They have millions of creators building things every single day. They're building glasses that are amazing. I get to try them out. They're really great. They look funny and they're, you know, they're not consumer ready, but man, I've seen the future, you know, and then you look at, you know, HoloLens, Microsoft's HoloLens, that thing is incredible. You got Magic Leap. There's a lot of people working on this, the head worn glasses, but you can't forget the 7 billion devices that people have in their hands every day. And, you know, so I think the companies that are focused on mobile phone based AR experiences and 3D experiences, I think they're the ones that are seeing the most. And you're even seeing some VR companies. So there was a company called Wave VR. They did concerts in VR, really beautiful, crazy concerts. The first thing was a DJ console. You could DJ in VR. And I was the first one to DJ in VR live. I performed in the Wave in VR for the Microsoft Build conference in 2016 or something. But anyway, they pivoted and now they are a concert platform for mobile phones and computers, right? So they went where the people are. And I think that's something that you have to be cognizant of is the sheer scale with mobile phones.
Yep. I mean, honestly, like we knew this was coming. I mean, we knew this.
I told everybody it was coming. I screamed it from the rooftops so many years. I said, it's mm-hmm. coming. XR, VR, XR. Yeah, we knew it was coming.
So what do you see? Yeah, it'll take time it'll take time to indoctrinate. Nobody likes change. Mostly because they're not sure of what it's going to do or where it's going to take. And there's been a lot of shady is the only word I can think of at the moment, but like shady innuendos and usages of internet connectivity and satellites and phones and everything that was handled and managed mostly by government, mostly, not completely. There are definitely some outside of government specs have done the same thing, but everybody's weary. Technology, as soon as it starts to grow, they're like, no, I don't know about that. And it's interesting because you look back, as soon as someone gets under, like really understands the knowledge, then they go, oh yeah, well, of course I'll do that. Sometimes I want to look at them and be like, so don't open your mouth until you're sure.
Like, well, I think the reality is, you know, especially in the NFT world now, because the NFT blockchain world has hijacked the term metaverse, which I don't know, great. So the way I look at, you know, the term metaverse now, it really is an all-encompassing term that includes three major technologies. You've got XR, virtual augmented mixed reality. That's obvious, right? I don't think anybody's going to argue with that. You have kind of the Web3 decentralization blockchain technology side. So the financing and ownership side of things. And then you've got this kind of creeper that nobody really talks about because they don't understand an AI. So you got machine learning, computer vision, you've got, you know, these technologies are going to power all of this stuff. And, you know, I think in the long term AI, well, in the long term AI will create, I believe it's something like $15 to $17 trillion by the end of the decade.
Yep.
So keep that number. So call it 15 trillion. XR is poised to create about 1.5 trillion. So AI will create 10 times more value. And I don't mean like, you know, people are buying XR headsets for 1.5 trillion. I'm seeing the value created. So if I use XR and it saves my company $10 million in training, there's $10 million towards the creation of the value. So, you know, you have to look at different technologies and the weight them onto which ones will create the most value. So AI will create 10x more value than almost every other technology combined for the next decade.
And then
after 2030 to 2040. And so that gets really interesting. So I think, you know, we're seeing this renaissance of exponential technologies all happening at the exact same time. You know, people are calling, you know, the spatial web metaverse now, and it's really just the internet with, you know, more technology baked into it. So now we can have ownership of digital goods using the blockchain. We can have spatial experiences where instead of looking at the internet and passively watching things, we can go in and participate like a video game, which we've had for years, but now it's on the internet. And now we also can have the internet come out at us. Whereas I hold my phone and now I can see a car in my space and walk around. So you can have the internet that is spatial where you go in, the internet that you come out, and then the internet that you watch in between. And so, and when you combine all that with AI, because how do you make sense of these virtual worlds? How do you make sense of the enormous amounts of data that we're going to be creating when people are walking around with their phones and you know, dropping virtual goods and these types of things? So the amount of data being collected, just dealing with that alone, AI is going to help us kind of make sense of that. But also we need computer vision for saying, if I'm in AR and I walk down the street, my phone needs to know where I am on that street, and it needs to be able to project data onto the real world in perspective to the real world. And if somebody walks by me, it can't be like, you know, it suddenly gets big or, you know, blotchy or something like this. So there's a lot of technology in behind that people don't realize is really machine learning and computer vision happening in the background. So blockchain, XR, and AI, those are the three technologies that will empower the metaverse as we know it, as we design it, I guess.
As we design it is right. So here's a fun one that I think our listeners All right. will probably appreciate. What do you think is going to be Metaverse's biggest successful accomplishment in between now and like 2024?
2024? Can we call it 2025?
Sure.
So the next 4 years? Okay. Well, first of all, the XR industry, and I only speak for XR because that's the world I play in every day. The XR industry will 10X in the next 5 years, 4 years. So where we are right now, will 10X. So that's an accomplishment in itself, but that doesn't really help humanity at all. So way I see this, and I mentioned it early, the metaverse represents the future of communication, collaboration, commerce, and culture. And if you take all of those things, you know, just look at, you know, Fortnite, right? Fortnite is a culture of people coming together as a community and, you know, meeting with each other, collaborating on, you know, goals, common goals, building things together. You know, obviously there's some shooting involved, but, you know, a lot of fun. And they've also created this economy where you can buy and sell things, right? Roblox, the same thing. So we're building new economies. We're building, you know, technology that allows anybody to own digital assets, share them freely. And, you know, we're seeing kind of, you know, the world react to bad actors in the world by shutting down bank accounts and these sorts of things, where cryptocurrencies decentralize that. And, you know, people think that cryptocurrency is a way to avoid legal and, you know, avoid and kind of hide from the legal thing. It's not. In fact, it's actually more obvious, because now there's a trace and track of every damn transaction. So yes, you can be anonymous up to a certain point, but at a certain point you can convert to fiat and use it. So, you know, it's not a fully anonymous thing. And I think it is good for transparency. So I think there's going to be a really big push for transparency. But one of the things that I think this technology, all the technologies together, is known as the metaverse. I think that it will really truly unlock is the ability to transcend race, color, religion, geography, and also socioeconomic status. Because anyone anywhere in the world can now put on a cheap VR headset, or just, you know, go in from their phone, be represented by an avatar who, you know, they can just buy some inexpensive clothes for, look really good, and show up in the metaverse. And nobody knows if they're from India, or if they're from Toronto, or they're from Ukraine, or wherever they're from. They're just the best candidate for the job. And I think people are going to work and live in and spend a lot of time in these metaverse worlds, because it has the potential to unlock the potential of humanity in virtual worlds together. Now, just if you just take training as the base model of this, we now can train people all over the world on anything with nothing more than a $300 headset. This is incredible growth and exponential growth. And so imagine we can train people in ways that were not possible. Imagine now we could take a $300 headset, no safety problems. There's not like a pen or anything. We can send them into prisons. Say, okay, for the next year, your job is to wear this headset 6 hours a day and learn plumbing and learn, you know, electrical and learn HVAC. And when you come out, you're going to be put on a construction site. And you're going to make money and be part of a, you know, a contributing class of society, instead of, oh, by the way, here's your $50, get out, and we'll see you back in a month when you get rearrested. This is a major problem for the world and the US specifically. And so I think VR has the potential to unlock a lot of different things in VR specifically, but the metaverse in general. If you can show up as an avatar to work, and nobody's going to question your, you know, your abilities, and then you can do that from a cheap device like a tablet or a smartphone, and you can get jobs done and do real work, then this becomes a level set for the entire planet. And it allows people wherever they are to really benefit from the exponential growth of everything. And my long-term goal was never metaverse. My long-term goal, actually, my daughter, you mentioned early in the bio, but my daughter invented sandals that leave a heart-shaped tan line. I'll play this video quick.
From a tan line, an idea was born, and the entrepreneur in this girl from Mississauga was ignited.
My name is Abby, and I'm a 10-year-old inventor and entrepreneur. I have a passion for fashion. This is the Love Sandal Princess Collection Flat.
A young entrepreneur, her name is Abby Smithson.
It's actually a real company, and I have an actual product.
How old are you?
I'm 10.
10
years old, an entrepreneur at 10 years old.
Were you trying to market anything at 10 years old?
Absolutely not.
Abby wants to inspire others with her dream big and follow your heart message.
And you came up with this?
Yeah.
Look at that!
In the summer of 2013, after Inventors Camp, I noticed my mom had ugly tan lines on the top of her foot. I thought it would be better to have a heart-shaped tan line instead, and that's how the Love Sandal was born.
So, it was through that lens that I realized that if we could teach one kid entrepreneurship and kind of these skills and learning how to fail, because trust me, there's a lot of failure there. There was a lot. We built shoes. They shipped them over from China. They weren't right. She was crying. Like, you know, there's failure involved in building a real product and company. And I thought, man, if we could do this at a global scale, when kids are young enough to make mistakes that are not consequential, like losing your house kind of thing. You know, if you could do that, mm-hmm. You could really empower everybody to think outside the box and build solutions that are in line with, you know, the UN sustainability goals of, you know, solving world hunger and these, you know, issues, these big issues that we have in life. Instead of asking, what job do you want to get? We should be asking, what problem in the world do you want to solve? And so my ultimate goal is to build an education system called the Unlimited Awesome Academy that will teach fundamentals of success through a learn to earn model and use the learn to earn to create habitual lifetime skill sets like, you know, financial planning, investing, mindfulness, gratitude, positivity, marketing, entrepreneurship, goal setting. You know, these are, you know, mentorship. These are all things that I had to learn the hard way over time. And there was no system for that. And schools are, they're not meant for that. They were designed for other purposes. So we're going to create a new system. And Metaverse was created to create the technology stack, which we've built and acquired and built, and the money that we need. So 25% of my wife and I's shares in Metaverse, we donated to fund the Unlimited Awesome Academy. And then the network, which people like you, you know, the great network that we've managed to assemble over the years of fantastic people looking to help us in our mission. So that's why we started this. And we're in year 7 of a 10-year plan right now.
I'm enrolled, Alan. I'm enrolled. I think your daughter enrolled me for sure, but
your daughter enrolled me. That's super cute.
Yeah.
I have God kids. I don't have kids. You and I are pretty close in age, and I do not have kids. I did not go down that road. Not interested. I got a human, and I got trucks, and I got dogs. That's great. But man, I got God kids. I mean, my godson was learning code in like 6th grade, and I was like, I turned on and was like, you can take my job anytime. And he was like, I don't think so. And I was like, wait, what? He's like, now I'm going to build something better. I was like,
I'm going to build something. Heard. Think about that.
I'm going to build something better.
Build something better. And the reality is the tools exist now. And one of the things that I always prided myself on is, you know, the emulator was a cool tool, but really it was a creative tool. It allowed creative, artists like we had Linkin Park, Mike Shinoda. We gave him one, and he actually came back. And he said, "Look what I built!" And it was just a bunch of octagons all over the screen. And I was like, "What is it?" He goes, "What do you mean? What is it? It's a piano. Doesn't look like a piano to me. It's just like a bunch of buttons." And he started playing it like a piano, and I was like, "Okay, this is it." The sheer genius of somebody created a whole new instrument from scratch on a tool that we built. And so, you know, building creator tools is something that I really have a passion for. And Metaverse, the engine that we've built, is all drag and drop, low code, and it really will unlock. So we used to have a mission at Metaverse to unlock the power of XR for everyone. And since everybody's talking about the Metaverse now, we just changed it to Metaverse creation for everyone. But the goal is to make it so easy that anybody can just sign up on a browser, on any computer in the world. You don't need any fancy stuff. Publish something, hit publish, and boom, it works. So here, you know what we'll do? Smile, guys. I'm going to build something. Here, smile. 3, 2, 1. All right. So I'm going to build something real time together with you. All right, we're going to do it. Engine. Here, we'll create a project. There we go. And I'm going to create a cube. Perfect. All right. So here's what we're going to do. I'm going to move you guys over there for 1 second. I'm going to drop that picture that we just took in here. Yeah. Put that there. Great. Okay. So now what I'm going to do is I'm just going to take that, put it there. There's our party cube. I'll brighten it up a bit. Okay, so now I'm ready and I'm just going to publish it. There you go. Now, if you have your phone with you, you can shine your phone on the QR code and it will open real time for you. All right, so I'm going to do it and...
I'm pulling it up, man.
All right.
Oh, I got an interesting question for you regarding like the technology. So how like it is like with XR is like immersion pretty close? Like talk to me about like how close we are to immersion. Cause I know that that's going to be the services and the impact and go any deeper in terms of training. Like how close are we to like immersion to, you know, using with our senses and everything like that. Right. Like if I visit a show.
Yeah, I posted a video today of me using, here, I'll find the video actually, and I'll play it for you. Give me 2 seconds. I just posted it this morning, so it should be right here. It is. Found it. 1 second. Nailed it. If you want to let me in for 1 second, I jumped into the Zoom call on my phone. Let me in for a second. And I'm going to show you. There we go. Got it. Great. Perfect. Turn the sound down. Okay, check this out. So I'm going to share my screen. Now you can see the cube we made, right? We can go inside. But we can also see it in AR. It's very meta.
Yeah, so like, are we
going to,
can you like touch it and it moves? Are we going to reach that point soon? Like where you can interact with like where you are in the real life and like the, like, you know what I mean? Like, can you like pick up the cube
interactive
with your hand? Yeah.
So it's kind of hard if you're holding a phone to do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a thing called the Merge Cube, and the Merge Cube allows you to do that. It's a cube with a bunch of QR codes all over it. And here, I'll find it for you. So the answer is yes. And I will show you two things. Merge Cube. Let me Google this for you. All right. Let me share my screen. So you can see here, this Merge Cube here, it allows you to shine a light on something, or put your camera on something and then see it. So they've got, you can put your phone on a camera, you know, thing here. But the idea with this is that you point your phone at this Merge Cube, and it knows which side you're looking at it because it got those weird patterns on it, and you can turn things around. So that's possible right now today. This company's been around for, a couple of years now. So yes, you can do that. But what I will show you that's coming, still probably a few years away, it still feels like a bit of a science experiment. Check this out. So I'm standing over there, wearing VR, looking through these two cameras, controlling these robot arms that have real touch.
Good job.
How cool is this? And I can feel the touch on my fingertips. How crazy is this?
Yeah, that's wild, man. So I feel like I've seen this before with surgeons, like, people doing surgery with something like that, like similar robotics. Yeah,
surgery. Maybe, you know, I hate to say this, but bomb disposal, mm-hmm. Diffusing mining, to anywhere where humans don't need to be exposed to dangerous situations, this is going to take over. Because why would you put a human in harm's way when you can put them a mile away connected with 5G and all of a sudden you're in, you know, you're able to do that with a robot? So I think personally we're a ways off from telerobotic surgery with those things. They're not quite, in my opinion, that one that I used was not quite ready for that. I wouldn't trust that robot on surgery. But I mean, I was able to take a knife and cut open a box and pick out a ball. I mean,
it's coming faster than anybody wants to admit. It's
definitely going to be here in the next, by the end of the decade, for sure.
Fair enough. All right.
So Josh, man.
Oh,
I think Josh has a question real quick.
Yes, Josh.
Let's put Heather in.
Yeah. So first of all, Alan, thank you so much for sharing all this information. I have so many questions. I'm trying to figure out which one to actually ask.
Ask them all.
For me, I'm in the video marketing space, and it's funny because back when I was in school, before I got in this space, one of my professors at USC was telling our class that, you know, one thing that you guys don't realize is you're in the wrong space. Well, what do you mean? Like, you telling us now? Like, we paid all this money and everything, and he's like, no, what you guys don't realize is you can easily shift it just depends on what you want to do, is being a lifelong educator or being a lifelong learner. And he was saying the wave of the future is AI. You guys think that it's video, social media, and all that. Those are just components. Those are pods. But AI is the thing that's going to drive everything going forward in the next 10, 20, 30 years. And as, you know, going through that whole process, hearing you speak about it now, it makes more sense. And so I wonder, the question I have for you is regarding like the, you know, video marketing and film production space, what do you see as possible for that regarding XR and, you know, and more interactive AI, you know, coming in the future?
Well, I can actually demonstrate that because I am an investor in another company. So my founder with Emulator, we stopped doing the Emulator company back in 2014. Last year, he came to me and said, "Hey, I've got this new invention. You want to do another product with me?" I said, "Sure, let's go." He invented an AI algorithm that automatically, see, I don't have it set up here, unfortunately, but you can look at a camera, and then depending on which camera you look at, it automatically switches camera angles. So hands-free, no switcher, no post-editing, and it looks like this. It's called Your Director AI. We're actually launching it in a couple of weeks, so it doesn't matter if we talk about it now. But there's an interface that goes on your computer for OBS, and you can connect up to, you know, four or five cameras on there. And you basically, it tracks your face, and it knows which camera you're looking at. And you can have a camera and a TV screen, overhead cam, whatever it is you want. And so
hard install or software as a service?
This one's a hard install. Yeah, we're just gonna charge $10 for it. You gotta be disruptive. It's a different world now.
Yeah.
People don't want to get beat for $1.99 or $10.99 anymore. Like, just it's $10, buy it, use it. It's great. Yeah.
I can honestly see, especially in this space, I see so many influencers that would end up using this, whether they're live streaming. Whether they're doing like product review type videos, like just knowing that people are now using like the multi setup or multi screen setup, if it's something as not only as proprietary, but it's also something as cost effective as this, you're essentially you're what they call like Apple-fying, you know, the entire industry, because so many people use this type of technology.
Yeah,
exactly. And so many people, they use this technology, or when they create the technology, they want to oversell or jack up the price so much that you only have a certain amount of people that are able to actually buy it, not realizing that if you lower the cost and you make it more cost effective for all the people that are getting in the space, you essentially can monopolize the market. Not saying that's what you're necessarily trying to do, but you know, you in essence, yeah.
If he's not, then he should be.
Well, there's a company called what are they called? Anyway, it doesn't matter. They came out with a foot. They came up with a switcher. We saw the video, and it showed them, you know, automatically switching from camera to camera. We're like, oh my god, did somebody just invent this before we had a chance to release it? And it was a foot pedal. Oh. I'm like, oh, that's cute. That's cute. AI. Good luck. You can't, hardware can't compete with software. And there's a quote from, I want to say Mark Andreessen, but I'm not sure if it is. Software will eat the world. Might even be Mark.
Benioff. It's Mark. It's Mark Andreessen. He did say that.
Yes, it is.
Mark, yeah. So yeah, software will eat the world. And it really has. I mean, look at what your phone can do now compared to all the things that, you know, I remember I used to have a PDA, which people don't remember that, but like a Palm Pilot, Google it.
Yeah, oh, I had a pager.
I had a pager. Oh my god, I had a pager. But I had like my PDA. I had my smartphone. I had a StarTAC. You know, the phone that opened up. So that's why I have a new folding phone now. Because, you know, why wouldn't you have a folding phone? But I've always had toys. But I remember I had like my PDA, my smartphone, and I had like a digital camera back in the day. And you know, all of those things are now on a phone. And now my phone, it not only does it have all those things, it folds in half. Like, what? What?
Yep.
This is just crazy. Samsung, I love you. We actually did the training.
That was a good one they came out.
I'll show you. We did the training for that phone. And I looked at the training so many times that it actually convinced me to buy the phone. And I guess marketing does work. So yeah, we did all the training for it.
Oh, that's awesome.
Isn't that cool?
Man, you guys are crushing it, man. Like, this is sick.
Yeah, it's all right. We like it.
That's amazing.
So all this was built on our engine with no code. Well, we had to code for some of this stuff, but every time we write code for a client project like this, we turn it into a code snippet so nobody has to write it again. That's the whole key for it. And speaking of things we've built on our system, I'm going to switch my background here because we built something super cool. We built a virtual mall. And it looks like this. And I'll walk you around it in a second. So yeah, it's super cool. We're working on an AI algorithm with some people that made this amazing algorithm, and it's conversational AI that you can have your avatar can, you know, you, I guess you're puppeteering your avatar, but you can have a conversation with an avatar, and it's like a full-on conversation like this. And you, when we design the avatars, we actually give it a personality. So we can say, you know, it's a 20-year-old woman. She's a bit sassy. You know, you give it attributes and it assumes those attributes. It's wild, wild technology. So now when you go to the mall, there'll be a concierge that you can meet up with. So I'll show you what the mall looks like here.
Man, while you're bringing us through here, I'm super interested to hear your take on this. I recently got into NFTs. I went on a buying spree. And how do you think that there's going to be some convergence with, you know, something like this space with blockchain, since that's, you know, has a lot of buzz, or do you think that it's going to be a while before
we would do this without having NFTs?
Yeah, we'll probably have NFTs. Yeah.
This mall,
like your avatar.
This mall will be 100 floors tall. We've already have 30 floors are spoken for, but right now you're seeing two floors. It'll be 100 floors tall, and each floor is 100,000 square feet, upgradable to 1 million square feet. So at the full build, the mall will be 100 million square feet. Total build is only 12 million square feet, which is still massive, massive structure. So it'll be 8 times larger than the current largest mall in the world, and all digital, available from any device. So you can go shopping. You can meet your friends here. It's multi-user experience.
So people could essentially like click on that or touch it and say, I want to buy it. And then they buy it. And then AKA Amazon's drones in the future.
You can buy it with crypto. You can buy the NFT version. You can buy the physical version, or both or all.
So how important is like in real life infrastructure and logistics important to make this, like, because time is everything, right? Like, time is the ultimate value. So like, if they buy it in here, like, is it probably important to probably have like the logistics for, so that people can get it right away, so they can get that dopamine hit, you think?
Well, if it's an NFT, when you buy it, it's immediate, obviously. Mm-hmm. But if it's a physical good, then we actually have the ability, because we built the entire tech stack, we have the ability to connect business intelligence tools. So we can connect a business intelligence tool directly to this. So for example, if I'm ordering this motorcycle, I can configure it. I can change the colors, whatever, that sort of thing. I can hit order now and it automatically will update Harley Davidson's business intelligence tools to say, hey, so cool. We need this bike made for this customer. It's all, because it's all web-based. So we just connect to the web-based BI tool.
And then they have it in the metaverse too at the same time. So it's like they buy it, they have it in the metaverse, and they can have it in real life. That's so sick.
Yeah, why wouldn't you, right?
Yeah.
A project like this is going to require a lot of companies are going to have to upgrade. If they're not doing things on a tech stack, companies that want to participate are going to have to upgrade.
So luckily we have a studio. So, you know, that's the first question that brands ask us is like, well, we don't have anybody that can do this. Can you help us? And, you know, our goal is never to be the studio forever. It's to be, yes, we will help you get in here. We'll build whatever you need. We'll recreate your stores. We'll make your products into 3D, whatever it takes. We'll create experiences, little mini games, whatever the brand needs or wants. But then what our goal is to train your teams how to do it themselves, because teach a man to fish. And so the idea is that it really is easy. It's all drag and drop. And actually, you know, it's object, you drop it you manipulate it, you put some parameters around it. Maybe when I click it, it does this. You know, when if click here, do this, and it's all drag and drop. It's all visual now. So yeah.
So, but how much does this? How much does the integration to drop shipping, manufacturing, delivery, like
it's an API.
How much integration? Okay.
It's an API.
Open, like anything goes. Okay.
It has to be on the web. I mean, we have to have access to it. And we do, I mean, we do have some restrictions in the mall. We won't allow people to sell guns, anything that can harm another human. But you can you'll be able to buy cannabis, alcohol. There'll be an adult floor. There's going to be a casino floor, several actually. There's entertainment floors. There's going to be live entertainment floors. So one entertainment floor is more like games and kind of permanent things where you can go and play games and stuff. The other floor will be live entertainment. So it'll be, you know, stages and movie theaters and concerts and comedy shows, things like that. Yeah. There's going to be a bazaar floor, two bazaar floors. There'll be 1 million square feet each, broken down to 5,000 square foot spots. So really small spots for small businesses to come in and be part of it. One of them is going to be super old timey, like, you know, the Casablanca style, old timey, like a bazaar. And the other one's going to be super futuristic. So we're going to have that dichotomy. Yeah.
I love it.
Why not?
I got one more question, guys. So I'm just super into this, selfishly, like getting enjoyment out of this conversation. So another thing you mentioned, that you guys have an accelerator, right? Where you're pretty much like looking to, you know, work with entrepreneurs and creators to help obviously drive. You don't do it anymore?
No.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about, like, so, like, are there entrepreneurs or creators, like, you know, because there's a ton of creators in the space, man. Are there partnerships to help, like, drive innovation and bring, you know, obviously their communities with them into, you know, into the space, right? Is there any co-building, or you guys pretty much siloed this in with your organization?
So we want to have it open for everyone. Now, we've been working on version 2.0 of our engine software for about a year now. We're going to release it in June, and that's when we're going to start, you know, involving the community. We kind of stopped promoting the software to the outside people because we knew we rebuilt the whole thing from scratch. We took the same thing, like the rendering technology, out, and we rebuilt the whole thing from scratch. And in doing that, we realized that there's no point in promoting the old version because the new version's coming in a year, and there were so many bugs to be fixed. Like, you can't fix these ones while building something new. So we said, look, let's just stop promoting it. We'll just use it internally. We know where all the bugs are, because once you get, you know, thousands of users, we ended up getting 3,300 users in the platform. And once you have that many people using it, they all find the same bugs, and you get, you know, 3,000 messages saying, hey, there's a bug here. And we're like, yeah, we know. Thank you. You're the 30th person today to tell us that bug. So when you know the bugs and you're there, you just can't promote it to the world. So we said, let's just put a hold on it. We'll build these things ourselves and with our studio, work through all the bugs and all the, you know, stuff. And then we'll launch 2.0. And when 2.0 comes out, it'll be, you know, and when we find the bugs, then it's not like we're deprecating it anyway. You know, you don't want to fix something that you're going to throw away. It doesn't make any sense. So, however, the hardest part that we found was we have to make all the stuff that people made before backwards compatible with the new system. So that was hard. Yeah, you can imagine. That was brutal. Oh, well.
I'm not even going to comment. That is brutal. That's just plain brutal. That sounds like punishing.
The first time we did the test, we dropped the file in and just went, nope.
Okay. You're like, that happened.
So it works now.
So cool, we should be looking forward to the launch in June?
The launch will be in June, at Augmented World Expo, we're going to be announcing that.
Cool. So this episode doesn't come out until June.
I want to record the first podcast episode with you right after you guys drop.
Sure, why not?
Right after he comes back from the expo. Get him on the books, because I want to talk to him right after he comes back from that expo. There is going to be so much to discuss.
There will be. I mean, if you had asked me a year ago, would we build a mall? I mean, we were building virtual stores and stuff, but we always thought we'll build the virtual stores for the brands and let them, you know, have it on their websites or whatever. We didn't think we'd own our own mall property. But the idea that, you know, we just met with a bunch of mall companies and they just didn't understand it. They couldn't wrap their heads around it. And this was before Decentraland and Sandbox and all these companies, you know, took off. And then when they took off, we went, okay, well, our technology, you know, is arguably better. It looks real. It doesn't look like, you know, I'm running around made out of Lego, unless it's the Lego store. But yeah, it's, you know, the traditional companies have come around a lot. Then now they're coming to us saying, hey, we understand it now. We get it because, you know, buying real estate a year ago, if anybody told you you're going to buy digital real estate for millions of dollars, you would have told them, okay, here's a, you know, a jacket that ties your arms up because, it was a crazy idea. And I, you know, I'm super grateful. And, you know, again, being lucky at the same time where our technology just happened to be coming online when Decentraland and Sandbox struck a nerve with people and then really like blew up. And we're just really grateful. We sold 4 floors of the mall. It was our first you know, dip in the ocean here. And we sold 4 floors in a few days for $1 million. So we went, oh, okay, this is a real thing. People want it. And now we've dedicated all of our efforts into building it. And it's going to be awesome. I can tell you, I can't tell you the brands that we're talking with, but it's, I mean, the brands that you saw.
You guys are cooking.
It's
that's amazing.
It's going to be awesome.
Congratulations, yeah. Alan. This has been a phenomenal jump, especially in the world of AI. I mean, you guys,
well, considering 7 years ago, my wife and I lost everything. We lost our last company to a shady investor and we lost our house, our all our investments, it, you know, started from basically less than zero. So in 7 years, we managed to turn it all around and here we are.
That's amazing. I graduated in the subject over a decade ago.
Sorry?
I got my postgrad in AI over a decade ago, knowing where we were going with this. Yeah. It's been a minute.
So much has changed in AI. Oh my goodness.
Oh yeah. And I've been teaching since then. I mean, I work directly with the head of the department here at Boise State. There was so much to be known about then. And it's grown 1,000,000% since.
I mean, 10 years ago, we didn't really have GANs that trained themselves then. Like we didn't, adversarial networks were not even a thing at that point.
They were
papers coming out of like SIGGRAPH and stuff. But yeah, the stuff we're doing now with our engine, like we just figured out because traditionally the web has been super underpowered for graphics because you could only use one core, right? It was really limited to using one core at a time. And so, or one thread, I guess, if you would. But we figured out a way to do multi-threading recently, like 2 weeks ago, and it's already built into our system. We figured it out. We're like, wait a second, we can parallel load all these things. Oh my God. It just opened up the whole world.
Yes. And
we did it. We found a way to do it without the security issues. So it's super, super cool.
Excellent.
And so that's 2.0 is going to have that. Sorry, go ahead. Yeah.
No, I was going to say, like, I'm super excited for part two. We got to do part two after you release, man. Like who knows what's going to happen between now and then. And then before we wrap up, like, as we have entrepreneurs and executive leaders who are listening to this, how can they like get involved or move in the right direction of getting into XR, you know, getting into the metaverse? Like what's something that you can leave behind to get them closer to getting involved in this space that is exploding right now in business?
Sure. So I will, I'll leave you guys this note. I'll put it in the chat and you guys can share this. I wrote a brand guide to the metaverse, part one and two. Part one is brand benefits and examples. And then part two is how to do it. So you can see, you know, what brands are doing, virtual showrooms, product training, 3D analytics, configurators, new designs, gamified commerce, Louis Vuitton's doing stuff, Gucci and Roblox. So it's a bunch of examples of what's happening and all the things you can do. And then part two is how to get started. So talking about 3D models, how to create them. There's 6 different ways to create 3D models, different game engines, the creation platforms, Unreal, Unity, Metaverse, avatars, payments, NFTs, all of these things. So real-time customer support, all of these things. So I will drop that in the chat. I also want to just draw one more attention to one thing that I wrote. It's called the Metaverse Manifesto. And hopefully you can put this in the notes as well. It's guiding principles for a better Web 3.0 or better metaverse. And the idea is that we don't want to end up in a decade from now, you know, writing books about the unintended consequences of technology that we're building today. You know, already Facebook and Meta have experienced the backlash of what can happen. So the guiding principles of the metaverse: open, universal, interoperable, technology standardization. We have to all be able to interwork with each other. Human first design. Diversity is essential. Respect for everyone equally. Honesty, openness, decentralization and global governance, transparency, accountability, fair exchange of value, relentless pursuit of truth, data sovereignty, governance and privacy. And technology can solve the world's greatest challenges, and risk-taking investments in the future. I think these are really, really great first steps. I mean, they're not comprehensive by any means, but you know, there's 7 rules of the metaverse written by my friend Tony Parisi from Unity. You know, I love this one. Rule number 7, the metaverse is the internet. And you know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, everything from safety right up to self-actualization can be delivered in the metaverse. Obviously, physiological needs are a little bit more difficult. But, you know, the 3 pillars for sustainable growth: environmental, social, and economic. And then a code of ethics: transparency, trust, one world, one metaverse, inclusion. Avatars are real people. For all the NFT people out there, Ponzi scheme should be highly discouraged. Ethics and values are up to all of us. And I love this quote from Gandhi: Earth provides enough to satisfy every man's needs, but not every man's greed. And I think it's important to realize that you can have anything you want in your life, just not everything. So choose wisely and work hard. And yeah, I'll leave you with that.
That is absolutely phenomenal. You guys, we will be putting all those links to obviously all the stuff that Alan's published in the show notes, and look forward to when this drops. It'll be a relatively closer to their actual launch date. So look forward to the follow-up part 2 podcast that will be dropping right after they come back.
Yeah. And if you want to get more information, it's Metaverse, MetaVerse.com or themall.io.
Boom. Thanks for coming, Alan. Appreciate you, man.
It's really a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Awesome. So thank you guys for making it to the absolute end of the show. We appreciate you. Don't forget to give us that beautiful rating, a review, send us some questions, reach out to Alan, go to his website. We have all the information in the show notes. Share this with someone who was super interested in the metaverse, or people who you think this is a perfect fit for them in terms of information and energy. So we always appreciate our Campfire Capitalism community, and we will see you next time. Bye. If you call me.